Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Shill Report, episode 8. Guys, we're rapidly approaching episode 10. But for you, those of you that don't know, The Shill Report is where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on this quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is publisher of We Are Libertarians, Chris Spangle.
Hello.
And managing editor of We Are Libertarians' new site, Joe Ruiz.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
Gentlemen, we have a serious matter to cover before we jump into the week's news and our guest. Legendary political reporter Jack Germond died at the age of 85 this week. He covered over 10 presidential elections, was a regular on the McLaughlin Group, a 50-year newsman, a journalist, as far as one would say, the journalist you would expect to find in the back room of a bar playing poker and smoking cigars. And he had a liberal leaning that doesn't always mesh well with this show, but he's one of the old school guys, and I think he was probably one of the good ones, and we just wanted to note his passing. Chris or Joe, do you have anything else to add to that? Or, you know, again, it's just the industry lost a warrior on that one.
The only thing that I know about Jack Germond is the old SNL bit where they made fun of the McLaughlin Group, and Dana Carvey would look over, Jack Germond, and then Jack Germond would be sloppy.
Well, at least we can remember him with a laugh. Thanks for that, Chris.
You know, my favorite thing that I ever read about Jack Germond was he had something called the Germond Rule that a lot of political reporters to this day still follow. And basically what he would say is if you went out to dinner with a group of people, everybody had to pay an equal share of the tab, no matter how much you ate or how much you drank, which always benefited him really well because as a heavier guy, he was a big eater and a big drinker.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Jack, we wanted to note your passing, and you know, it's always sad to see the Warriors pass, but that's a part of the business. Next up, guys, it is that time of the month to where we bring on the Shill Report a guest from the industry to hear about the background. If you remember, our last guest was Casey Hendrickson, the radio host in Michiana. This week, we have brought Rob Kendall. Mr. Rob Kendall, welcome to the Shill Report.
You guys are kings of industry, mountains of men, and it is an absolute pleasure to be in your presence.
Spangle, capture that drop. I like this guy.
Yes.
Flattery. Come back more often.
So, Rob, can you give us the 30-second to a minute background on you? Tell the listeners who you are. Of course, Chris, Joe, and I know you pretty well, but go ahead and frame this in the best light possible for you before we wreck it.
I've done a lot for a lot of people. Maybe I'll just leave it at that.
I know how this guy got elected.
That was smooth. So, as Joe mentioned, you are an elected official. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I am. I am a town councilman in Brownsburg. I am the youngest person to ever be elected to serve a 4-year term on the Brownsburg Town Council. And until some guy on the Danville School Board got elected at 19 last year, I was the youngest elected official in Hendricks County.
Oh, that's rough. Hey, you set a record, though. You're a trendsetter.
Could you imagine being a 19-year-old and you're in charge of the school board now? Like all the teachers who pissed you off last year.
What's going on in Brownsburg, Rob?
Well, here's the thing. You know, it really took a lot of my thunder because, you know, when you're hanging out, being able to tell the opposite sex you're the youngest elected official in the county is quite the benefit, but I'm the second youngest, doesn't have any pull whatsoever.
Hey, Liz.
Rob, does that actually work for you?
I've tried everything, fellas.
Yeah, I am a regular listener to the Rob Kendall Show, heard here on the WAL Radio Network, and poor Rob. Poor Rob. He just seems to try everything, and it doesn't seem to work out. You're a good-looking guy, platonically, man-to-man. You're a handsome fellow. What do you think the problem is?
Well, Rob, I mean,
I love lines, Rob. So tell us about your last date. Let's see if we can fix you.
Well, I think as I do pretty well outside of my co-host. She can't stand me, but other than her, I do pretty well.
Let's get real, Rob. Let's get real. April Gregory, is she the little redheaded girl for you? Is there unrequited love?
So for the listeners that don't know, Rob does a podcast called The Rob Kendall Show on the WAL-Radio Network. His co-host, April, Rob was quite attractive and seems to almost repel you on every show. Is that fair to say?
Well, as you fellas know, it's always the fallback excuse is always, well, we're just friends.
Right. So, yeah. No.
Friend zone.
Yeah. No. That's right. Someone
April's
asked about.
Great. We love her. She does an awesome job, and she loves you, Spangle. She is quite the fan.
I really like April. April looks the celebrity she most resembles is Kaley Cuoco, I'd say, from The Big Bang Theory. Would
Penny.
That be accurate?
Yeah.
Penny. Yes.
That is high praise.
Yeah. No. She's. She's a very, very smart woman.
She's no Jodie Sweetin, but she's close.
No. Nobody is Jodie Sweetin, let me tell you.
Rob reliving the dropping Full House on us, huh?
I mean, Rob went to the Backstreet Boys concert and New Kids on the Block.
No, it was New Kids on the Block, Spangle.
It was all three, and Boys to Men. And
oh my gosh.
He was just scoping for babes.
It was in KOTB. It was 98 degrees and it was Boys to Men, and the female to male ratio was 30-1. I'm not kidding. Fellas, there were so many women there that they actually closed the men's restroom and just put women signs on it.
Oh, wow.
Did you feel embarrassed when you went in anyways?
Nope.
It's wow. Don't worry, ma'am. I'm an elected official.
They have to check your credentials at the door, see if you have the right stuff.
The cool thing was, Ruiz, Nick Lachey is still wearing the same shirt I saw him wear when I was a sophomore in high school, so good for him.
Oh, that's awful.
And you got to see Donnie Wahlberg topless.
Well, Wahlberg, like, does this scripted thing. You know, it's all scripted wherever they're at. They try to make it all look all impromptu. But, you know, he does this scripted thing, like, where he takes his shirt off, and then he knows his butt crack is showing. So for the next hour and 20 minutes, it's Donnie Wahlberg's butt crack. Thank you very much.
Which, actually, Donnie Wahlberg's butt crack has a producer credit on Blue Bloods. Little known fact.
All right,
let's get to business.
Let's steer this TMZ-esque episode back into journalistic waters. What do you guys say?
Please.
So, Rob, not only are you an elected official, a New Kids on the Block fan, and an obvious ladies man, but you're an author. And so part of the reason we brought you on here is that you do have a book out, which I'll hold up to the camera. So if you're watching online, there's the book. It is called Path Less Traveled, Stories of Collateral Damage and Conviction. Now, Rob, I'll be honest. I didn't know you well before I got the book and before we started talking. I thought that, you know, you'd gone to prison, you did some damage, and now you're coming out and it's a story of redemption. Furthest from the truth on that, why don't you give us the overview of the book, and then I got a question for you on it.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys again for having me on, and I just noticed Spangle is rocking a tie-dye shirt, so kudos to Spangle there for doing that. That's a good look on you. It's the Rupert shirt. I voted for the other guy, but your shirts were cooler, Spangle, so
that is
I
true.
Give you credit for that. Yeah, sometimes it's just fun to just write stuff down, and it's fun to be entertaining, and I used to be on the radio as a full-time job before my life was, you know, but anybody who's spending time in radio knows eventually just your will to live gets gutted out of you if you're in the business for any amount of time. And when I was in radio, I was interviewing a lot of, you know, well-known people that were interesting, and people always said, hey, if you ever, you know, calm down on this radio thing, maybe you ought to explore the idea of writing a book. So when I was elected to office, I wrote my first book. It did well. Everybody said, hey, you should expand on that. Tell some more stories. And so that's kind of what the new book is just a continuation of the first book.
So you got a chapter in here, Rob, that I want to – well, actually, let me start with this. I really enjoyed the early stories of you on the radio, and I wasn't sure when you came on if I should be calling you Rob or Big Talker. Right?
Well, the best part about radio is getting fired, because you know when you get hired for a job, typically within a year you will be fired. And radio is not like any other business where they're nice to you when they fire you. They degrade you on your way out the door. I mean, it's brutal. I should literally write a whole book about all the times I got fired from radio.
Joe works in radio sales, so it's not quite the same thing, because everybody over there has souls. See, when you go into the...
But we still have to deal with programming.
Yeah, when you go to programming, it's just this sea of death and misery and self-loathing and self-love in every way. I mean, it's just, it's a sad, sad career.
Nice.
Well, it's I worked in a classic rock station when I was much younger, and it was around older people. A lot of them were on their last legs in the industry, and everybody was so sad when they came to work each day. And I was like, man, that's never going to be me. And like 2 years later, that was me, except I was 23 instead of like 45.
I had the same exact experience. Like, there was one guy who worked there who was on our 70s station, and he had worked in L.A. and New York, and was a really big name in radio at one point, and now he was living in his car. You know, he had moved for 30 years every 3 years to a different market, and it just was like, I'm finding a different job. So,
well, there used to be a guy at the classic rock station where I worked the overnight shift, and every time I'd come in there, I was worried I was going to see the guy like hanging upside down from the, you know, the front door or something with a I quit sign strapped across him.
So what?
So Rob,
go ahead, Ryan.
I would say my best fired story. It was probably when I was about 20 years old. I had a boss who everything I said he hated, and finally he pulls up MSNBC's website and he goes, "You see this? If it's not on the front page of this website, you don't talk about it." So the first thing it was the Deborah LaFave thing. And I commented on Deborah LaFave being attractive, and within 2 minutes. Other programming starts playing, and I was told, "You are fired."
Oh, wow.
And I said, but it was on the front of MSNBC. I'm much more mature now than I was back then.
Really? You have wrestling posters behind you.
So we'll jump back to your book real quick. There's a chapter in there I wanted to ask you about. Chapter 14 of your book, Party of Wimps and Weirdos, and the first sentence in this chapter is, "I am ashamed to be a Republican." That caught my eye a little bit, and I know that, you know, you definitely gave a lot of context to that, but what are your thoughts on that, Rob? What are your thoughts on the Republican Party of today, the Tea Party slant, and even the libertarian strain that seems to be ever growing, much to the delight of
Christians? Isn't it fascinating how many elections the Republicans have found a way to lose over the past 3 or 4 years? The Republican Party used to have people that really stood for something, and I think the problem the Republican Party has is the establishment has stopped really standing for something, and so there's a lot of people that feel lost, and I think that's what the Tea Party was. But the issue then becomes the Tea Party has yet to come up with a proper vetting system to put candidates out who espouse good ideology. They're doing pretty good with that, but these people that they put out, for the most part, now there have been some exceptions, people like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, Deb Fischer to an extent, they're just not able to espouse their views in a way that make them electable. I mean, you look at Richard Murdoch. How the heck did that guy lose that election? Or Linda McMahon or Christine O'Donnell? It's like we keep losing these very winnable elections, and it seems like our choice is either establishment Republican who's wrong, or Tea Party person who can't not put their foot in their mouth.
Right. I mean, Murdoch lost it one blubbering tear at a time, and a slip that the press and Donnelly just would not let go. But I think you're right, especially in the state of Indiana. How does a guy like Murdoch lose without really just basically throwing it?
Right. Well, yeah. And Spangled, I'm sure, will say, like I said, I know Spangled did a great job with Rupert, by the way. I mean, what a great campaign they ran considering the limited resources. But I was never worried that Governor Pence was going to say something, you know, just weird that was going to cost him the election. And whether you like Governor Pence or not, or agree with his views or you don't, the fact is those are the sort of people who can articulate their positions that the Republican Party, not only in this state but across the country, really needs out there.
So, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong. Governor Pence had a roadmap or something like that?
Yeah, and I actually advocated for it.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
I think Dora the Explorer has one of those also.
Now, Rob, I mean, we're poking a little bit fun, but you actually did work on the Pence campaign, is that right?
I did, and I actually wrote a chapter in the book. The governor, I kind of talked to some of his people before I wrote the chapter. I said, hey, there's some great stories about Mike Pence behind the scenes. And the one thing about Mike Pence that I've said to people is whether you like him or not, what you see publicly, and he gets criticized sometimes as being too presidential or whatever the phrase might be. Mike Pence behind the scenes is what you see in person. That is who he is. And if you like it, great. And if you don't, that's okay. But I thought it was neat to be able to write some really behind-the-scenes stories about how Governor Pence is, not as a politician, but kind of as a human being.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the book for me hits a sweet spot, Rob, because I love radio and I love politics. And to have the focus on, you know, part of your radio adventures were outside of the state of Indiana, but to basically have an Indiana-based book on radio and politics, I think it really hits a sweet spot for a lot of our listening audience as well. It's just one of those, it's a Hoosier book written by a hardcore Hoosier who loves radio and is way into politics. And I think you've captured that incredibly well. Spangle, I'm going to be immensely disappointed if you don't ask at least one Mike Pence question.
How do you sleep at night, Rob? Did you
probably on a pillow of victory, right?
I am very proud of the governor, and it was a great day for me the other day when my very good friend Dwayne Sawyer was named the new auditor of the state of Indiana. Dwayne and I have done a lot of libertarian type things here in Brownsburg that have been good for the town the past couple of years. So it was nice to see those two guys be able to get together. One thing I'll say, the Republican Party has got to do a better job of, and I think a lot of it is the type of people we nominate. We have to reach out to libertarian minded people like you guys. I mean, a lot of you guys are pretty libertarian entrenched people, but I think libertarian leaning people votes are there for the Republican Party, but we got to be able to put our hair in. We got to be able to have some fun. We've got to be able to laugh at ourselves, and we got to be a party that is open to ideas of freedom and liberty, regardless of what party they come from.
So Rob, let me throw a thought at you, and I don't expect you to answer for the governor or anything, but I think what gets libertarians, especially in the state of Indiana, is that, you know, Mike Pence ran. And I was actually, I asked him a question at the Fort Wayne debate, and I got to meet Mike Pence afterwards and talk to him for a while. And I like him, you know, just talking to him one-on-one. It's hard not to be charmed. It's almost like a Bill Clinton effect, right? There is that aura that, you know, he shakes your hand, he looks you in the eye, and he makes you feel like you're the only one in the room. And it's like, wow, I need to stop talking to him now. But something I would throw at you from a libertarian perspective is... would be, you know, Pence would frame himself as a limited government type of guy. I think that's a fair statement. But at the same time, in his first year, I believe over 300 new laws were passed in the state of Indiana. And I think that's a point that libertarians take very seriously, that, you know, this is a guy that's saying he's for limited government, he's for all these things, and yet not only he's increasing the size of government and the legal scope, and it just seems to conflicting with that principle.
Yeah, and I wrote in the first chapter of the book, and it actually starts out with this, I'm a recovering idealist. And being in government, I realize I'm never going to have 100% the government we want. Let's just say we got Rand Paul elected president of the United States, which I think would be a great thing for this country, with a Mike Pence's vice president, by the way. I think that'd be super. But Rand Paul's never going to be 100% the president we want, because you, Ryan, or Joe, or Chris, are the only person who could be 100% the person you want. And I will tell you, being in elected office, you can be whatever you want to be. But if you can't get the majority to go along with you, which the higher up you go, the harder that is to do, you're going to have to accept if you can get 80% or 70% of the stuff you really want. And in the case of Governor Pence, and I testified in front of the House and the Senate on this, he got a tax cut. Some people say it's not big enough. Some people say it could be bigger. Inheritance tax got phased out. There are reforms in local government. There is positive economic development. So as long as the state in the climate we're in can continue to move forward with a lot of the things that were put in place by Mitch Daniels, if I can get 70 or 80% of the things I want, I'm going to be okay with that, even if I'd like to see things done better.
I think it's a fair point. The incrementalism approach, I think, is what you're advocating here, and it's one that that I at least support. It's something that I think libertarians should be more open to. You know, you're not necessarily – you don't need to hit the home run, you know, when 10 singles will still score plenty of runs, right?
Well, and I'm working on a column now for a group called New Voice for Politics, which is designed to try to get younger people involved in politics. And I'm writing a column about how younger people can present themselves better. And one of the things I said in the in the column is focus on the kitchen table issues. You know, would it be nice to have the Sunday Blue Law repealed? Absolutely. Do people feel strongly about gay marriage or marijuana laws? Absolutely. But we got to focus on the things that resonate with the most amount of people. And I think that's the hard thing to do on the outside looking in and say, well, you should focus on this, this, or this. When you're in there, though, you've got to focus on things you can get done. And a lot of times those are the kitchen table issues.
Yep, it's all about streets and sidewalks, I'd imagine, for you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, first year in office, we passed one of the largest municipal property tax cuts in the history in the history of the state of Indiana. We cut our budget. We made major reforms to the way employees were getting paid. I wanted to do a tax rebate to every citizen in Brownsburg. I didn't get that, but I got 80% of what I wanted. And I said, hey, that's pretty good for year number one.
So, Rob, you started in radio. You pivoted into politics for a while, went back to radio, worked for Mike Pence. Now you're a podcaster. You do have the Rob Kendall Show on the wall or on the WAL-radio.com network. What is it like moving from live radio to the political sphere and now to podcasting? How's that transition been?
You know, there's a great song by Harry Chapin. It's one of the great songs written about radio, and it's called WOLD. And it's about this disgruntled old disc jockey that, you know, he sings this song back to this woman he used to date, who he's the father of her children. And he's trying to get back with her. And it's this story about his life on the road on the radio. And you guys know this. And I know Spangle has spent a lot of time in radio, and Joe and Ryan, you have too. Radio really takes it out of you. It's a very intense industry. It's oftentimes a very lonely industry. I'm having more fun doing this once a week podcast, The Rob Kendall Show, than I ever had being the big talker down in North Carolina or working at a top five classic rock station. Radio is a rough industry, and I think podcasting is the future. Plus, I get to work with April. What could be better than that?
Yeah.
Now, Rob, before we get too far away from that, I did want to ask you, you know, would you be sure to have April Facebook and tweet this out, because she does seem to have a lot more followers than you.
Yeah, she's way more famous than me. That's the other reason we could never be in a relationship. If we broke up, she's got many more political friends than I do. Hey, I got a question for Spangle.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
If I want to run for governor as a libertarian someday, what sort of concessions do I have to make?
Well, first you have to denounce Mike Pence. That's number one.
And then I think followed by that, Ronald Reagan.
No, we like Reagan.
If it makes you feel better, I've got my Ayn Rand book right across the way there.
Copious.
And I keep it on the table in my living room to impress chicks. So I'm halfway yeah. there to being a full fledged libertarian.
Copious
Who's
amounts
Atlas,
of weed,
Rob. Who's Atlas?
You must have a long history of drug abuse. That's a joke. No, I totally. And to go back to podcasting, I'm 100% with Rob. I mean, when you are in radio, you get 5 minutes to talk, and then you go in and you do breaks or commercials or news or weather. And a lot of times you don't get to flesh out what you want to flesh out. You know, and we are libertarians. We're doing, you know, two topics a show, and we do about 45 minutes on a topic, and you get every aspect. Now, you've got to prepare way more than you do in radio, but you get to actually get your point out. On WIBC, the talk station here in town, if you're on the morning show, you have 7 minutes an hour of content, which is insane. You know, not only that, you also have the bureaucracy that comes along with that. You know, you both are on, Ryan and Rob are on the WAL Radio Network. I don't ever tell you guys what to do on your show or how to do it. I may give pointers, but there's no telling you what you must or will not do. You know, and there's just nobody telling us how to run the network at all. It's great to have total freedom in every way.
Well, Chris hits a great point, and that is, you know, from the standpoint of a lot of the great thinking is coming out of the libertarian mindset these days, and I think that's something the Republican Party really needs to pay attention to and heed the example of if they're going to continue to move forward. Is we have to embrace the Rand Paul libertarian type ideology.
That must be the future for the party, at least. At least from our point of view, that if the Chris Christies of the world are able to beat down the libertarian strand, I just see years and years of Democratic wins, and I think the rest of you guys would probably agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I don't see a Chris Christie beating a Hillary Clinton or a Joe Biden if Biden pulls off a miracle primary, but
I disagree. I think superficially, Chris Christie is a better candidate than a Rand Paul superficially. On the outside, Chris Christie will tell it like it is. He's got a big personality, and that can attract people, whereas Rand Paul, you sort of are left. He doesn't have that I feel your pain quotient a lot of times. Rand Paul is a very intellectual guy, much like Barry Goldwater, and you don't get the, you know, you don't walk away from a speech saying, wow, that really pulled at my heartstrings. You know, he's more of an intellectual guy, and, you know, Mitt... I certainly think that you couldn't get less charismatic than Mitt Romney, though.
So Rob, speaking of charismatic, it seems like you do pretty well speaking to others, and I'm sure life is a, you know, with your life as being an elected official, that's important. You know, but what is or what has been the craziest moment from being in office? And if you could share that with us, and just give us a little insight into you've given us insight into radio. Insight into podcasting, insight with Pence. But what is it to be elected and then to serve?
Well, the big thing is when you run for office, and by the way, again, I know I mentioned it earlier, but I do want to commend Chris and the job the Libertarians did with Rupert and also Andrew. You guys did a great, great job last year. And if you guys continue to make gains like you did the past year, the Republican Party is going to have to listen to you guys and really respect you if we keep losing voters to you. When you run an ideology. You say, hey, I'm going to do these seven things, and I'm going to just we're going to run. We're not going around the wall. We're not going over the wall. We're going right through the wall, as my hero, the Ultimate Warrior, once told me. And which, by the way, there's a chapter on the Ultimate Warrior in the book, too. One of the things you realize quickly is you're not going to get everything you want. We talked about that a little bit earlier, and I was shocked because I won 65% of the vote. So you think, oh, man, everybody's on our side. We're going to come into this government next year, and we're going to just steamroll our way to success. And then you realize, no, you were able to get people fired up to vote for one Tuesday in May. And the key then becomes trying to keep those people engaged over the next 4 years. And it's very, very hard. And I found about a year into it, I have a lot of supporters and a lot of fans, but they're not people in the government per se, because I'm a reformer. So it's hard to reform when you're still dealing with the same establishment type people in the government.
Rob, love the insights. So for the listeners out there, if you want to hear or at least read more thoughts from Rob, he has a very pragmatic, stoic view on life. It's a great philosophy that he conveyed in the book. Some more stories and insights on politics and radio, please do check out Path Less Traveled, Stories of Collateral Damage and Conviction. The link to Amazon is in the show notes. You can also find a link to purchase the book on indianatalks.com. Rob, we appreciate the insights. We're going to pivot into the news of the week. You are more than welcome to stick around, crack wise, add your input. We'd love to hear your thoughts on these stories as well. And again, just, you know, thanks for providing the insights on the show report.
Hey, thank you guys for having me on. I would love to hang around. You know, like I said, Spangle is like a celebrity to me. You know, it's like
if him and
Limbaugh were on opposite sides of the street, I'd have a very hard time deciding which way I'm going.
Oh, I'm sending you an autographed headshot as we speak. you know, nice. I want to say I had a question. Somebody sent a note to me and said, you know, why do you have a dirty Republican on the WAO radio network when you're libertarians? And I said, that's part of what we're trying to do with the network, is give a broad perspective. You know, the libertarian world is not just one specific ideology. It ranges from Maya to Rob Kendall. And you can't get much different than Maya and Rob Kendall. So, you know, we want to give a broad perspective on the network and through everything that we're doing of libertarianism from all sides. So, you know, I think
Maya wants to kill me.
No, Maya wants...
That means she likes you, Rob.
Yeah, Maya wants you dead, but she wants everybody dead, so don't take it personally. And
yeah, we would be nervous if she was advocating for you. That would
right.
be troubling.
And if she calls you a statist, don't worry. Like, you scored on that libertarian purity test, you scored like in the 60s or 70s. Like, I scored in the 120s, and Maya thinks I'm a statist. So, you know, if she calls you a statist, ignore that as well.
All right, guys, so the first story we're going to pivot into came from Reason.com. It's titled The Third Party Catch-22. It's an article from A. Barton Hinkle discussing the race for governor in Virginia and how the Libertarian candidate has been left out of the media narrative. And not only is that bad for journalism, but also bad for politics. An excerpt, just real quick. The article then moved on with its main theme, the negative tone of the fight between Democrat Terry McAuliffe and Republican Ken Cuccinelli. It never pointed out that voters actually do have a third choice, Roger Sarvis, who is running for governor on the Libertarian ticket, that he will be on the ballot as well. It's an interesting article that really digs into why leaving the Libertarian out of the narrative is a disservice to the voters, and also tries to pull apart why that happens. And it goes through certain reasons such as polling numbers and certain other, you know, some objective and other subjective reasonings for leaving Libertarians out of the either the narrative or the debates. It's just it's one of those hot button issues for us that I thought I'd pull out and discuss, especially because this particular race has gotten the attention of many Libertarians nationwide. I believe they've reached out to Gary Johnson, as who most of you know was the 2012 Libertarian presidential candidate. They've asked him to jump in. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to, given his new duties with the foundation he runs, but it's really starting to get some nationwide attention, and still, you know, Robert Sarvis, who's the Libertarian choice, is still unable to get the attention that some feel he deserves. What do you guys think about this? Do you believe that polling limits are used to artificially exclude third-party candidates, or is that just a red herring?
I think Joe should tell his story first, because he had something very similar happen in his race with Jackie Walorski.
That I did. It was one of the interesting things, well, in the article, was that the candidate Cuccinelli, he declined to be a part of this debate that was being sponsored by the League of Women Voters and the Virginia branches of AARP, and because he said it was a left-winged, stacked race. And so they just didn't have the debate. They didn't invite Sarvis. And, you know, if we canceled a debate in my race every time one of the candidates decided not to show up, we wouldn't have had a debate, because Jackie Walorski, who now is holding the office, she didn't come to all but one that we were all three included in, and then there was one debate that she involved herself in with the Democratic candidate that they excluded me from. And so I've kind of been in a similar situation to what Sarvis is in. Because, and all right, going back to the debates that they did invite me to, even though Jackie was not a part of it, they felt like they had a duty to, since my name would be on the ballot, at least introduce me to the people who chose to show up, even though those particular debates were not televised. And for the one that was televised, that I eventually got excluded from, it was an interesting process to take part in. I called the guy who works at the radio station who was organizing the debate. His name is Bob Montgomery. I'll go ahead and put that on blast in the show here. And I said, Bob, I really want to be a part of this debate. You know, I think that the fact that I have earned what I've earned as far as, you know, fundraising, the fact that I've, you know, made some significant steps beyond what the prior Libertarian Party candidate who was allowed to take part in the debate has done, should qualify me to sit up there on stage with Jackie Walorski and Brendan Mullen. And he said to me, and I'll always remember this, Joe, it's not my job to get your message out. That's your job. And I couldn't believe that he said that, because you know, it's a huge disservice to the people when all three candidates, or however many candidates, are going to have their name on the ballot. They should have an opportunity to voice their opinions on the issues and to get across to anybody that'll listen.
It's not even like
Rob, it looks like you're chomping at the mic.
It's not even that Joe was, you know, one. It's not an issue of ballot clutter, as sometimes they'll say. Joe was on the ballot. It's more confusing if people walk in and they only know about two of the three choices that are on the ballot. You know, we in America have a First Amendment. You have the First Amendment right to gather together, to speak your mind, to place your name on the ballot. And I don't understand how media outlets can justify limiting speech, which is exactly what they're doing. You know, what does it hurt to espouse the ideas or to make the decision for the voter of what will and will not be heard? I mean, Joe's ideas were different than Jackie Walorski and Brendan Mullins. And why is his voice not allowed to be heard? Why is it up to the editor of the newspaper or the TV stations to make the decision for the voter. Let the voter get the information and decide for themselves. You know, it's such a breach of trust with their readership when they do this sort of thing.
Well, to add context to Joe's particular situation, if you remember the prior election cycle, you know, Jackie Walorski was narrowly defeated by Joe Donnelly, who is now Senator Donnelly. But in that race, the Libertarian was able to pull enough votes, and I believe that the Walorski campaign from that 2010 race really felt that the Libertarian harmed her and her campaign and really prevented her from being elected. And whether or not you buy into that narrative, whether or not a vote is owed to the two parties, which I don't believe, and that it otherwise would have gone to the Republican or Democrat, I don't want to go down that road. But just to say that, to give the context, that I truly believe that Walorski was gun-shy about being seen on TV again with another Libertarian simply because the ideas do clash so well between a Libertarian and a supposed Tea Party candidate like Walorski.
And you know what? I'll go ahead and toot my own horn to the extent that if you go to YouTube and you type in Joe Ruiz, Jackie Walorski, Wabash debate, you'll see a video. There's a camera in the back of the room. Some parts are a little bit hard to hear because it's, you know, there's a distance between where we were sitting and where the camera was positioned. But I think if you watch that debate and if you listen to the answers and some of the things that were said, I think that she had good cause to not show her face at the televised debate, or at least not have or have a reason to not come to most of the other debates, because I thought I did a fantastic job. I thought I held my own, and I had quite a few conservatives shaking my hand on my way out the door telling me that I'd changed their minds.
You actually bought ads during you actually bought ads during the TV time of the actual debates, didn't you?
Yeah, because I mean, I figured if that was their final answer, if they were not going to allow me to be present, then it's like he said, all right, if they're not going to be responsible for getting my message out, then I was going to have to do something to get that message out. So I purchased on radio and TV the channels where the debate was going to air between the Republican and Democrat. I purchased the first commercial break spots and ran commercials, which basically just said, this is, you know, who I am and why I'm not at the debate with Jackie Walorski and Brendan Mullen tonight. And I tried to explain with the 60 seconds they gave me why I wasn't there and encourage people to check out my website so they actually knew who the third party candidate was in this race.
So, Rob, on libertarians being left out of debates or not quite getting the attention that the two main party candidates get, I know you've got some strong feelings in this area. I was hoping you're going to share some of that with us.
Well, Joe's speech just inspired me to follow him on Twitter, so congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
I'm sure your several months of pain and hardship you went through in running for office, that made it all worth it. Here's the thing. Libertarians are usually the rock stars of these debates. They usually come up with the memorable one-liners, say things that people carry with them. One of my political heroes, somebody who inspired me to run for office when I came back home to Brownsburg, was a guy named Dr. Michael Munger, who is, I know Chris knows him very well. Dr. Munger was the head of the political science department at Duke. He ran for governor of North Carolina in 2008 as a libertarian, did better than any libertarian ever, got them ballot access for future elections. He did so well. And Dr. Munger destroyed Pat McCrory and Bev Perdue in 2008 in those debates. And, you know, everybody's got to have their own standard by which they allow people in and out. But I think the more views, especially a party like the Libertarian Party that is gaining traction rapidly. Again, you look at the numbers that Rupert pulled in, and you look at the numbers that Andrew pulled in, you had some serious gains in this state. And if the Libertarian Party can continue to nominate forward-thinking people, people with name ID, people that people recognize on the ballot and are willing to get out and campaign like a Rupert did, you could see a Libertarian elected to statewide office at some point in the state.
I think that's what we're all after. I hope we continue to see those gains, and I think a large part of that, though, will be, you know, definitely check out the show notes, read the article from Reason. It does give some interesting information about just the way that third parties are treated during the election cycle, or how some of these debates pan out. I ran as a main party candidate a number of years ago, and even just running with that kind of support. So if you're a Republican or a Democrat, you have infrastructure behind you from day one. You have ballot access from day one. You have access to the debates from day one. And even from that perspective, running for office is incredibly stressful. It's incredibly demanding. And it is one of the hardest things that a person can go out and do. You're putting yourself out there as a candidate. You're seeking approval from your community. And to have that extra handicap on a third-party candidate, I can't imagine what additional stress that adds. But definitely a great story from Reason, good food for thought, and hopefully we see the debates and some of the press coverage open up for Libertarian candidates.
What party did you run for?
Just to be clear.
Oh, I thought I could get away from this. I ran as a Democrat back in 2010, but I am now a card-carrying member of the Libertarian Party, and thank you, Chris Spangle, for calling me out.
It's okay. I'll back you up. I used to be a Democrat also, and I think Chris used to wear solid-colored T-shirts. And
well, isn't it interesting how we've just heard two guys, oftentimes it's Libertarians are associated with disaffectioned Republicans becoming Libertarians, but we hear the story here, and you hear there's so many Democrats who've said, we've had it with the Democrat Party.
You know, I don't believe in the narrative that Libertarians steal from Republicans. I think that a Libertarian-type candidate is appealing to the Democrats on the social side of the spectrum quite a bit. And to come over, you know, I was disillusioned by Obamacare. You know, I started asking questions even when the president started – when this started discussing, and I asked, well, wait, what authority does he have to pass this kind of law? And then you start asking the constitutional questions, and then you start getting interested in, you know, why can government do the things that it can do? And all of a sudden you're reading Murray Rothbard, and you're looking at you know, you're starting to read some of these other things, and you're doing the Henry Hazlitt, the economics, and really learning that many of the preconceived notions that you have about economics are wrong. And then that, mm-hmm. So now you're a fiscal conservative, but you're also, you believe in the democratic principles on the social side. You have no place in either party, right? I mean, neither party is going to accept you if you're a blend like that. And so, you know, I had people around me that would say, you know, Ryan, I know you ran as a Democrat, but you talk like a libertarian. And you guys know Ryan Ledke, and he really guided mm-hmm. me in that area as well. And eventually I just came around and said, look, I have to go with what I believe, and the Libertarian Party is it. And I'm not going to be a Rand Paul type where it's, well, I'm going to be a Republican because I want to win, but I'm going to turn the noun libertarian into an adjective and be a Libertarian Republican. I have to go with what I believe in, and this is where I landed.
Now, see, I don't mind that so much. I figure if the ideas are at work, that's all that really matters in the long run.
Oh, I agree, but watch the slide that he has to do.
Well, and I think you guys would say you guys are all very reasonable libertarian-thinking people where you just mentioned it. You want the ideology, I think as Joe mentioned it, you want the ideology to move forward, and you don't care whether that comes from a Democrat or Republican or Libertarian, and you guys are still, I would think, open, even though you're proud Libertarians, for voting for people that best espouse that ideology, the same way I'm open that I've voted several times in my life for Libertarians and done so proudly.
Yeah, I think we all agree with that we look for the reasonable candidate. I don't think any of us are voting straight party tickets. Maybe Spangle.
No. Are you a straight party voter last election, Spangle?
No, I have voted for all three parties and an independent in every one of the last three major elections.
So it's a, you know, when you're reasonable about your views and when you're really trying to be cast a principled vote, I think that's how it ends up. You end up, you know, it what Chris just explained is how Washington should be. There should be a mix of ideas. There should be a, you know, some kind of negotiation. There should be give and take. You know, some Democrats are good. Some Republicans are good. We really like these Libertarians. There should be that blending of ideas instead of this party line ideological wars that are just divisive. And, you know, hopefully we get there.
I had a reporter in 2012. He asked me, what do you think of the narrative that Libertarians in these races are just here to steal votes from Republicans? And I told him, I think that's a ridiculous notion. If you look into libertarianism a bit, you'll see that we don't actually believe in theft. So,
well, and there really shouldn't be a need for the Libertarian Party. I mean, you look at the Libertarian Party is because of the failure of the two primary parties. And if the Republicans did their job, which is to follow through on a lot of things they espouse, those ideas of liberty and freedom and the idea of, you know, live your own life and be prosperous and keep your share and earning your keep, there wouldn't be a need for third parties or the Libertarian Party. But the fact is, the failure of the two parties have created a need for that third party.
So, guys, I'm going to jump into some journalistic news. I think this is a great discussion on just the libertarian place in the election cycle. And again, that Reason article really digs into the ideas that we're, you know, we've taken this idea and we've put it into our own stories. But that article does jump in and put some perspective, especially on the Virginia governor's race. I do want to talk about the Sunday show rating shuffles. Now, Chris, you and I especially, we love tearing up David Gregory.
I think David Gregory is one of the biggest mistakes in TV history.
Chris, I think you're correct, because Meet the Press recently fell to a 21-year low in the ratings. It is now third place on the Sunday morning shows, trailing CBS's Face the Nation and ABC's This Week. This is the first time that Face the Nation has moved to the number one spot in 15 years. What is going wrong for David Gregory, Chris? Was he just the absolute wrong choice to replace Tim Russert?
Yeah, he is an idiot. And he's very, very stupid. And he is very bad at his job. So, he doesn't ask tough questions. I think you were going to have a rebound host anyways. Tim Russert was so amazing and such a tough act to follow. And, yeah, he worked for Moynihan, a Democrat in the Senate in New York. But that didn't really faze him. You know, Stephanopoulos, in a lot of ways, it doesn't, you know, the fact that he worked for Clinton doesn't affect him at all. You know, he moved into journalism quite nicely and is able to separate his personal politics from what is a reasonable question. David Gregory, though, just seems to, he's a public relations person. He's not a journalist. And there was a devastating quote by somebody in I think it was Rich Lowry from the National Review, who said that who is David Gregory to judge whether or not Glenn Greenwald is a journalist? What story has David Gregory ever broken? What major event is David Gregory's name attached to? Nothing. He's a shill.
I think he had a pretty interesting moment with former President Bush where he got tangled in a microphone and then yelled at by George W. But aside from that, I'm not sure what stories he has broken. I'm wondering whether or not he's just stuck in between two incredibly talented people. And what I mean by that is Face the Nation's Bob Schieffer. Say what you will about Bob and his, oh, the party's got to change, and then he doesn't suggest anything. But between Bob Schieffer and George Stephanopoulos, these are two talented guys. They ask good questions. They conduct good interviews. Not saying that we always agree with their point of views, but they are talented. And when you put this shill, hackish kind of person like David Gregory between them, I think what we're looking at, guys, is just the lack of talent is really starting to show.
2 weeks ago, when the Amash Amendment was a big point of discussion, Meet the Press on my Comcast TV guide said that Justin Amash was going to be on the program, and I watched for the entire hour, and he was nowhere, and they barely mentioned him. So that's enough to make me bitter and not want to watch David Gregory anymore.
So what is it that makes Meet the Press? Because this was the show that I think we all grew up with. You know, when it was time to watch the news on Sunday, my parents would put it on. I'm sure that you guys, it's the revered show. What is it that makes it relevant again? Is it firing David Gregory? And if that is the answer, I'd like a nomination from each and every one of you. Who replaces David Gregory to bring Meet the Press back to being relevant?
Here's a thought. Rush Limbaugh was and always will be number one until he decides he's not going to do it anymore. And one of the reasons is not because of his political ideology, but because he always looks like he's having so much fun when he's on the air. No matter what he's talking about, no matter how important the topic, you always believe Rush Limbaugh loves life and is having fun. And a lot of these talk show hosts, especially the Sunday talk show hosts, and even Chris, you know, Chris Wallace on Fox News, they just don't look like they're having any fun.
I mean, Rush is high a lot.
So, Rob, who would you What's that, Chris?
I said Russia's high a lot. So
I knew he was a libertarian.
Yeah. No.
Well, I'll tell you who I would pick, but it might not be the prevailing choice, but I don't think this panel of esteemed gentlemen would give me any argument. Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Ooh. No, I'll tell you who it should be.
No, you're wrong, and here's why. Go, Chris.
It should be either A, Chuck Todd, although he doesn't have too much personality, or B, my man Jake Tapper.
Spangle, you would rather look at Jake Tapper or Chuck Todd for an hour over Kimberly Guilfoyle?
It's a complicated issue, Rob.
Chris is going to go off with his broner now. Joe, who Jake Tapper is just special to Chris, kind of like my Mike Pence moment. But but Joe, who would you replace? I'm assuming David Gregory needs to go. Who would you replace him with?
Rob Kendall.
Rob Kendall. April would have to co-host, though, right?
Oh, absolutely. I would have less of a problem with Meet the Press if they would move it to an earlier time. I think that's the kind of the pace of that show. You want to wake up in the morning and grab your cup of coffee, maybe make a little breakfast and sit down and eat it. By 11 o'clock, I'm past it, and it's just not as entertaining.
You know, yeah. For me, guys, I'd say definitely they got to fire David Gregory, and this won't shock anyone, I don't think, but I think that seat could be where Glenn Greenwald gets his payoff. Can you imagine Glenn Greenwald hosting Meet the Press?
Have you been hanging out with Rush Limbaugh?
No. I would love to see Glenn Greenwald just destroy these talking heads Sunday after Sunday as they try to spout out the nonsense that David Gregory just lets fly by. It would be the ultimate reversal, too, for that whole segment of Gregory questioning whether or not Greenwald should be prosecuted as well for his stories.
So that's a no on Guilfoyle, huh?
I'll give you Andrea Tarantos or Dana Perino over Guilfoyle.
You know, Kimberly Guilfoyle was married to the mayor of San Francisco at one point. She was Mrs. Mayor.
Wow.
Mrs. Mayor.
It wasn't Mrs. Newsom, mayor. Was it?
Yeah, she was married to Gavin Newsom, and then she married a furniture heir after she broke up with him. So I think in the order of succession, furniture heir is to mayor as host of the Rob Kendall Show is to furniture heir. So I'm clearly the next best choice.
So, Rob, it looks like we are coming to the tail end of the show, but I'm about to go into Joe Ruiz's favorite part of the show report. Joe,
oh, we're going to do this tonight? That's exciting.
Joe, what time is it, Joe? Tell me. And give me a little acapella for what time it is.
So embarrassing.
You want me to go back to the Stevie Wonder?
Do it.
It's time for Jay Carney, and Jay says what?
Nice.
We have guests.
So, Rob, this is what we do. Beautiful work, Joe. So, for the listeners out there, if you never want to hear that again, we definitely need some intro and outro music for this game, which we did get a positive comment on iTunes about, where the reviewer that none of us know, we're not sure who did this, but they specifically mentioned how much they liked Jay Carney Said What. So if you never want to hear Joe do his Stevie Wonder impersonation again, we definitely need some intro and outro music for this game. But Rob, here's what we do.
Way, last time I did the Stevie Wonder, I won. So I plan on winning again tonight.
Joe, best of luck to you. We got to get Spangle on the board, though. So let's see if Chris can pull it out. So Rob, here's what we do.
That's what she said.
I'm going to... So I'm going to play a clip where Jay Carney, of course, he's the White House press secretary, where he's asked a question. I'm going to pause the tape there. I'm going to present you guys with three possible answers that Jay Carney gave. You guys are going to pick which one was true, and we will check the tape to see who gets the points this week. Rob, do you have any questions?
Can I hear that in the form of a question?
You can answer in the form of a question if you wish.
What am I answering again?
So here's what. So basically, we're going to play a video clip from Jay Carney getting a question. I'm going to pause it before he answers, and I'm going to give you three options. And you're going to tell me which was the answer that Jay gave.
Got it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Here we go. Here comes the clip.
Last one. Last week, CNN reported that dozens of people were working for the CIA around Benghazi on the night of the attack. And they are claiming that some of these CIA operatives now feel like they're being intimidated, that they're getting polygraph tests sometimes on a monthly basis, which is much more frequent than CIA officials apparently normally get, because the government is trying to figure out whether or not they're talking to the media, they're talking to Congress about what happened that night. Can you assure the American people that's not happening? And can you shed any light on what the CIA was doing? I realize there may be classified information there, but in general, is there anything you can say about what the CIA was doing there?
So there's a question, guys. Potential answer number one from Jay Carney. I don't have information on CIA individuals or operations around the world. I would refer you to the CIA on that, and I would also refer you to the very clear statement in response to that put out by the CIA, and then going on to read the statement that was put out by the CIA. That's option one. Option two, did Jay Carney say the tragic incident in Benghazi is currently under investigation? It would be inappropriate for the White House to comment on that or on the individuals involved in said incident at this time. The resource management practices of the CIA are also not on the talking points for this afternoon's briefing. That's option number two.
The fact that you've made one of those two up is amazing.
Here's option number three. The events surrounding the attack on our consulate are still unknown. Whether or not the CIA has, in fact, moved some of those involved for their own safety is a matter that you'll have to take up with the personnel management at Langley. Quite honestly, until the perpetrators of the attack are brought to justice, what difference does it make? Well, that's option three. Option one, deflect and read a statement from the CIA. Option two, Benghazi is still under investigation. Personnel management is not part of the talking points. Or option number three, what difference does it make?
I'm going to nix number three. That's the Hillary Clinton thing. So I'm not going with that. So it's either one or two. I'm going to go for number one, deflect and read the CIA statement.
Joe's on number one. Chris?
I am convinced that it is number one, okay? Because I don't think that Jay Carney would say talking points, but the fact that my gut is telling me that it's number one means I'm going to answer number two, because I've been wrong on every single time we played this game. I've been wrong seven episodes in a row, so I'm going number two.
Well, Rob Kendall, which one do you want?
I'm going with number one.
Rob's on number one with Joe. All right, guys, answers are locked in. Here, let's find out what Jay Carney said.
I don't have any information on CIA individuals or operations in, around the world. I would refer you to the CIA on that. I would also refer you to the very clear statement in response to that put out by the CIA. Which says the CIA.
Oh, Chris Spangle.
Yes. Stevie Wonder with the comeback.
There you go. Joe Ruiz, that's two to you. Oh, Chris, what do you got to say about you? Oh.
I see. I should have gone with my substantial gut.
Oh, Rob Kendall, congratulations, sir. Your first attempt at this game, and you are 1-0.
Well, I'm a trained government official. That's what I do.
Wow. So that just means you're going to have to come back and see if you can take on Chris and Joe again at some point.
You guys are absolutely awesome. I've had a blast. This is some of the most fun I've had in radio in a very, very long time. And, you know, I just want to say on record, it was not the same at the State Fair this year without seeing Spangle.
That's true.
Walking around with his chest out, and he was in his moment of glory. So if you could just run a candidate next year, Chris, it'd be nice to see you again.
Oh, right. I have given up the politics life. I can't do it anymore. I just go out there and beat myself to a pulp, and for what? Glory, fame, money.
Hey. Until next cycle, then Spangle will get the spirit back.
Exactly.
Well, there was a singer in the late 70s and early 80s called Michael Stanley, and he wrote a song called Somewhere in the Night, and he said, all you get to keep are the memories, you got to make the good ones last.
And on that, Rob, we're going to close out this week's show. I think that's an excellent place to stop. If you'd like to know more about the show report, please leave us a message on Facebook or Twitter with the show report hashtag. Find out what we left out of this week's episode on page 2 of the show report, available at wearelibertarians.com. Listen in on iTunes or on wal-radio.com to hear past episodes. The show report also plays on indianatalks.com. Also, be sure to purchase Rob's book, Path Less Traveled, Stories of Collateral Damage and Conviction, available on amazon.com or on indianatalks.com. And remember, folks, when the media breaks the news, the show report's here to fix it. Good night, everyone.